This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we talk about the Climate Justice Tribunal.
We're all drowning or being killed by oil. Today we'll hear from three activists who returned from Cochabamba and are going to talk about the threat we all face.
Stay with us.
Today we're absolutely thrilled and excited to talk about a book done by one of our own, by the famous Heidi Boghossian, Executive Director of the National Lawyers Guild. Heidi just handed me the book. It's actually free. You can go to the National Lawyers Guild website and get it, and I'll tell you that in a second. But the book is called Punishing Protest, Government Tactics That Suppress Free Speech. And it is utterly remarkable. I mean, straightforward, lays out how the government, particularly since 9/11, has made it difficult, if not impossible, for us to protest government policies.
In 2004, we wrote another report called The Assault on Free Speech, Public Assembly, and Dissent. It came out right after the Republican National Convention, and it basically cataloged a whole range of police tactics that the Guild had been hearing about and observing from our work monitoring First Amendment-protected activities in the streets. It had things like using motorcycles and horses in what we call the rush tactic to hoard protesters into a corner, basically surround them by the motorcycles or the horses, then sweep in and conduct what we call false arrests. That's basically arrests that are not based on probable cause. And several independent review commissions came out with reports after that and after protests at the FTAA demos in Miami, finding that, in fact, the real motivation for the police doing this was to keep people out of the street and out of the eyes of the mass media. So we were collecting information after that, and suddenly I realized, well, things have escalated. It's not just a catalog of police tactics in the streets that's very well coordinated from all levels of government and implemented basically all around the country. We see larger trends.
In major cities all around the country. Yeah.
Right.
So whether it's raising taxes or cutting programs, the name for what we call the government response to the demand of its creditors is austerity. It's imposing on a society a severe regimen of rising taxes and or cut government spending to please and satisfy creditors.
But let me ask this, you, I understand this, please the creditors so they can basically pay their debt that the creditors have in their possession, the debts.
That's right.
But the creditors, are they in that strong position? Why can't the country just say, we'll go bankrupt?
They could.
But then they're finished, right?
Well, not that they're finished. Mm-hmm. Then they have declared war. That's the classic act of war between debtor and creditor. Mm-hmm. Sure, I'll give you an example. One of the governments that creditors have been really harsh with is the government of Greece. That's why Greece is in such trouble. That's why all public employees in Greece last month saw their wages cut between 15 and 20% with a promise of a further cut in October.
In the beginning of 2009, statistics show that 84% of the people who were stopped and frisked by the New York City Police Department were Black or Hispanic. Very few of these stops, however, yielded any contraband or weapons.
My role as one of the plaintiffs in the case is essentially that for me, a couple of times over the course of the past few years, I've been stopped in my community illegally, first really given no real opportunity to defend myself, right?
And when you say illegally, mm-hmm. meaning the police didn't have what we call probable cause to stop you, you weren't doing anything that they saw as, quote,
no.
suspicious.
No, I wasn't. Going about my everyday life.
Where do you live,
literally.
David? What neighborhood do you live in, David?
Parkchester in the Bronx.
Adam, I just want to give our listeners some sense of the time period. Your book opens with, I think, about a dozen men meeting in a tavern in London. And then the slave trade ends. I don't remember what year that begins, and it ends, or the British finally ended at some point 30 or 40 years later. Just give us a sense of that.
Okay, here's the basic time scale, which is different, of course, than how it was for the United States. This movement in England really, in an organizational sense, began with this meeting you speak of a dozen men, actually in a Quaker bookstore and printing shop in London in 1787. It caught fire about 6 or 8 months later, and you can actually find the very moment that it caught fire, which I found fascinating to try to figure this out. There were no opinion polls, of course, in Britain at that time. But there were people whose job it was to gauge public opinion, who were the proprietors of London's debating societies, because if they had a popular topic, they could fill the hall, like a rock concert promoter today knows which bands are hot. Well, suddenly, after many, many years, when no debates in London, and these public debates were a big spectator sport, no debates, there virtually no debates had been about slavery or the slave trade, abruptly, February 1788, half the debates in London are about slavery or the slave trade. It sort of caught the public imagination quite suddenly, became a huge popular movement. Then, to sort of compress the story, in 1807, the British Parliament voted to end the slave trade, not to end slavery itself, but to end the slave trade. And that was a very momentous milestone because Britain controlled about half of the Atlantic slave trade at that point. So the superpower of the day saying we're going to stop was a big deal. It didn't end slavery. The end of slavery in the British Empire didn't come until the 1830s.
We actually wrote a booklet about how that unlawfully expanded wiretapping against American citizens. So they put that into a statute, the Patriot Act, as you said. Meanwhile, something we don't know until, of course, recently, they were engaging in warrantless wiretapping of American citizens apart from the extra authority they'd already asked the government.
Yeah.
So we have our eyes on the wrong ball. They're doing something completely outside of the law they even asked Congress for, and boom-o. And we're focused on writing about how unconstitutional that part of the law is.
And the other piece of it was the relaxing of the FBI guidelines.
Right.
The movement in the 60s was powerful enough to get the FBI out of our lives. You know, we used to say the police state is when the police can infiltrate your private organizations. Those are our organizations. This is supposed to be a democracy from the bottom up, not from the top down. And the cops were in all the various anti-war groups. They were on the campus. They were everywhere. We got them out of there. But those guidelines that kept them out of there were reversed. And now we've got them. And I'm sure that there are cops in every mosque in this country. There are cops in every peace group in this country. There are cops in every campus in this country from the various intelligence agencies. And that's been a sea change and a reversal of our victories from the movement of the 60s.